Welcome to the St. Albans podcast, bringing you news, views and reviews for the city and district of St. Albans. In association with the Hearts Advertiser.
Welcome along to another edition of the St. Albans podcast. Producer Sam's here with me.
Hi there, Danny.
Hello. Well, what we're going to do is Sam's going to run through what's coming up on this week's podcast. Before we do that, though, I've got a few hellos, a few shout-outs, I believe they sometimes call them.
Shout-outs.
Yeah, so I've got to say hi to some people who've been in touch this week, including Toby, who says he's loving the podcast, which is lovely. Thank you for that. He emailed Danny at stalbanspodcast.com, apparently he says he is a St. Albans boy, but he now lives in Croxley, though he still comes across... Like, it's not that far away, but he makes it sound like he's moved to a different continent.
Okay. Not in America.
No. But I don't think he has to change your watch. That's always a sign, I think, if you had to travel a distance. But apparently he comes over to St. Albans a lot as his parents still live here. So hello, Toby. Hello, Toby's parents. And thank you for your email. Danny@stalbanspodcast.com. Another email that we had, and I promised I would say something, is to Angela, who emailed us. And she, again, emailed Danny@stalbanspodcast.com. She came up with something she wanted us to talk about and to mention. And I tried to actually get her to come onto the show, but we just couldn't work it out in the end. Couldn't find a time that she was available that we could do it. But I promised to mention what it is she's involved with. And it's something called Gardener's Sunday.
Okay.
Right. And so this is this coming Sunday, and it's down at the Abbey Theatre. And Angela is behind this. And from noon on Sunday, that's Sunday the 12th of May, there will be a bring and buy plant sale in front of the theatre. Flowers and vegetable plants will be on offer at very competitive prices. The bar will be open, and there is a raffle for an Aylitz gift card. And apparently no rain is forecast. I don't know how true that last bit is, but the rest of it is spot on. So that's from 12 this coming Sunday, which is the 12th of May, down at the Abbey Theatre at the bottom of Hollywell Hill. And then in the evening, and again, this is all part of the fundraising effort that Angela is heading up, at 7 p.m. in the Abbey Theatre studio, they are putting on an evening called The Third Day. And several actors and singers will be delighting us with a miscellany, I like that word, a miscellany of words and music, including pieces from Alice in Wonderland and Richard II, a trio of dock plants musing on life, a visit to Blanding's Castle, and songs about bees, cucumbers, roses and bananas. And that is free entry as well, although donations will be welcome. So that's all on Sunday, the 12th of May. So, Angela, thank you for emailing us at danny@stalbanspodcast.com. If people listening now have got things that they want us to mention, we'll gladly do it, won't we?
Absolutely.
So, producer Sam, what else is coming up on this week's podcast?
Well, talking of theatre, we'll be discussing the local theatre scene with David Widdowson. And we'll be interviewing Roberto about the Sonic Hearts Music Festival. And then, of course, all of that briefly interrupted by Hot Topics with Ian Rogers and me, producer Sam.
So we've got all of that to look forward to. Before that, though, Sam, we had a little St. Albans podcast night out, didn't we?
We did.
What was it that we... tell the listener what we did.
Well, we went to see a local play at the local theatre, the Abbey Theatre.
Yes, thank you very much to the company of 10 for inviting us. We were their guests, and we went down to see the play, it was called Things I Know to Be True. What did you think of it?
I think it was probably one of the best, if not the best, show in terms of, I guess, like, I would split theatre into sort of stories and musical theatre.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So we're not talking about musical theatre, we're just talking about, like, kind of non-musical theatre.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I didn't know if there was a separate genre.
Okay.
I think that was probably, if not the best one that I've seen in St. Albans by our local theatre groups.
Okay.
I really, really enjoyed it.
When I went with you last to the theatre, mm-hmm. which was a couple of months ago, to see a play, A Beautiful Thing, down at the Abbey Theatre, I thought then that was one of the best plays that I had seen in a very long time.
Yeah.
And I think this play was almost as good, if not maybe better. It was so well done, as was Beautiful Thing.
They're so obviously well done. Quite different stories, touching on different things.
Very sort of much a brief outline. What was the story about then, for Things I Know to Be True?
So we have a family of five, the parents and three children.
Yes.
But they're grown-up children now. So we open with the youngest, who's travelling around Australia. Around Europe. She's from Australia, sorry.
Yeah.
And she, she sort of talks about her experience, but something happens to her, so she doesn't want to be there anymore. Nothing like horrible.
No, I think it's probably fair to say that for each of them, each of the characters in it, something happens to them.
Yeah,
they each have a moment where they are the focus of the play.
Exactly. So,
and then it's sort of seeing about their dynamics, how they interact with one another, how it impacts them as a family, and it's so powerfully done. It was also funny. It was in places. It was quite amusing, but it wasn't a comedy. It was quite a poignant drama. But some beautiful lighter touches to it, and some compelling, fantastic performances from all five of the actors in it.
Absolutely. It touched on some really important issues as well, that and essentially showing in the harsh light of day how, like, not awful isn't the right word, but how dysfunctional families can be. And I think, like, obviously you don't know what happens in a family until you get to expose it, like it is in this play.
I would imagine that in the context of the play, this family would have looked like they had everything. They would have looked like they were, they were sort of middle class, they were, not too rich, not too poor, they were idyllic. Yet it kind of showed that there's probably no such thing as an idyllic family. Every family have their issues, have their struggles, the things that they have to go through, and this family was no exception, but beautifully played.
Yeah, very powerful, I thought.
Okay, and it is on until Saturday the 11th of May, so do get down to the Abbey Theatre to watch that if you get a chance. But you'll find out more about all of the plays on in the local area with David Widdowson a little bit later in the podcast. And if you do want to get in touch with us, there's a number of ways you can do that. You could always email
Stanny at StAlbanspodcast.com.
We're also over on the Facebook.
Find St Albans Podcast on Facebook.
Or on Twitter.
Follow St Albans Podcast on Twitter.
Yeah, we don't actually give you the details there, but it's at St Albans Podcast, and that's the same with Facebook, and it's the same with Instagram. And also, all of the stuff can be found on our website.
Find out more on our website, StAlbanspodcast.com.
But now I think it's time to bring Front Page Frankie in for some more local news.
Stop the press. It's Front Page Frankie.
Frankie Berry from the Hearts Advertiser is here with us in the St Albans Podcast studio. Hello, Frankie.
Hello.
So, Frankie, what news stories are we looking at this week? Where are we starting?
So we're starting the big St Albans story. I mean, really the big national story, which was that the local elections happened last week, last Thursday, so that's May the 2nd for anyone listening at a different date. And it was a bit turbulent over in St Albans district. For 8 years the Conservatives have held the district council, have a majority, and they were the ruling administration, as it were. But on Thursday that all came tumbling down, so now the Liberal Democrats have the most seats but don't have enough for a majority. So as it stands at the moment, they're going to have to make some kind of deal with another party in order to hold a majority on the council, because obviously it's quite difficult to make decisions if you don't have a majority.
So just to explain this, the Lib Dems now have the most seats on the council.
Yep.
But that doesn't put them in charge. So the council is what they call NOC, isn't it? No overall charge?
Yes, that's the one.
And
I think it's no overall control.
No,
actually.
Okay.
Yeah, but yes.
Okay, you there. You should have seen the little grin as she corrected me there. Okay, so and that's because they don't have a majority.
But they have the most seats on the council.
So does this work now like in the... general election from back, was that 9 years ago, when there was no outright winner and the country had to go into effectively a coalition. Is it a similar thing on a local level?
It's exactly that on a local level, yes, exactly that.
So the Lib Dems now have to approach one of the other parties and look at joining to make a combined cabinet? Is that
yes,
how that works?
Yes, exactly. I mean, obviously they would negotiate between themselves about what that would mean for the administration. But... yeah, all's to play for, really. It's quite an exciting time.
Have they made any preliminary kind of announcements about that, or have they made any decisions?
They haven't. They had a meeting the night after, but we haven't heard anything from
it. Okay.
Yet. Important thing to note is that Councillor Alec Campbell, who was the leader of the St Albans Conservatives and leader of the council, has lost his seat. So he's not just... kind of lost leadership of the council. He is no longer a councillor. So he became the leader of the St Albans Conservatives a couple of years ago when Julian Daly, resigned, stepped down. Yeah.
Okay.
So
was this a surprise locally? I mean, did they have like polling? Did they have predictions? Did Alec Campbell know that it was going to be was his seat under hot contention? Or because one would assume the leader of the council that his seat would often be quite safe, but I guess that it just goes to show that's not the case. But did they know that this was likely to be
well,
a thing?
There aren't local polls in the same way that there are national polls, so there wasn't any kind of like all. Most people are voting Lib Dem, if that makes sense. But speaking to Alec, he was saying that on the doorstep, the impression that he was getting is that Brexit is dominating people's minds, and the uncertainty with central government, a Tory central government, was basically pushing some voters away from the Tories and towards the Lib Dems, who have nationally and locally had quite a strident People's Vote campaign and have come out in favour of a People's Vote. Now, we all know that St Albans voted Remain. Mm. They bucked the trend. So that's quite a popular... popular policy in this area.
Okay. And also, at the last general election, it was the Lib Dems who made the most gains, wasn't it? And massively ate into the Conservative majority, you know, and Maine.
In St Albans?
Yes, that's
true?
That's what I
said. Yes, yeah. Yeah. And I'm not sure whether that's true nationally. I don't think it is true nationally,
which is why I didn't say it. I said locally, in the general election, that Daisy Cooper, who is the Lib Dem candidate, came quite close to Anne Mayne in the election result. You know, whereas in the past, Anne Mayne's enjoyed quite a large majority.
Close in relative terms, in that Anne Mayne still had a fair few votes, more than Daisy.
She still has a majority, but I believe it was considerably shorter, or smaller than it was previously.
Yes, that is true.
The Lib Dems are the ones who made most of that ground.
Yes, there was their campaign, the St Albans Lib Dems campaign, was very much, if I remember it rightly at the time, trying to get Labour voters to, you know, a left coalition, Labour voters to vote Lib Dem to oust Anne Mayne. Now, obviously, that didn't work. It's quite a risky tactic, I think.
Well, in the previous election, you could have added the votes together locally and it wouldn't have beaten Anne Mayne. But I believe in the last election, had they all joined forces, it would have been enough to beat her.
I don't remember, but I'm
speaking with a degree of authority here. But I did read this stuff up, okay?
okay.
All right. Although, obviously, I'm happy to be corrected, just not by you live on it. When is the deadline is there a deadline for when the local Liberals have to announce the new cabinet?
The changeover, as it were, will happen at the next full council meeting in the summer. I'm not quite sure of the date, but
so they've got a month or two to sort out how they're going to form the new cabinet.
Exactly.
Okay. We'll have more from our very own local news correspondent, who is none other than that didn't work.
Front page Frankie.
There we go. But more from that was smooth. Frankie will be back a little bit later in today's podcast. Joining us now on the St Albans podcast is our very own theatre correspondent, David Widdowson. Hello, David.
Hi, good day.
Hi. So, David is the, as well as being our theatre correspondent, he is the chairman of OVO. And you guys have just completed a very successful run of Twelfth Night. You did it here at the Maltings Theatre, but then that wasn't enough. You had to then go and take it out to a second venue.
Yes, yes, down to the Rose Theatre in, or Rose Playhouse, I should say, down in London, which is just behind the Globe Theatre, and was discovered 30 years ago now.
Right.
When an office block was knocked down just at the south end of Southwark Bridge. And the foundations of the Rose Theatre were found then. There was a bit of a to-do between the archaeologists and the developers. We had the spectacle of Judy Dench lying down in front of a bulldozer, and the upshot of that was that a number of actors turned up, Dustin Hoffman, Ian McKellen, Alan Bates, and so on and so on, and got a lot of publicity. And then the replacement office block got built on top of that, but the theatre was preserved. And because there wasn't enough money available to excavate the whole site and develop it, as people would have liked, it's been kind of put on ice. So part of it is used as a stage and a theatre, and the other part is the excavated bit, which is preserved. So it makes a very small but very atmospheric playing space.
Okay.
A lot of pretty famous people are involved with the theatre. There's a gala evening next Monday, for example, where Judy Dench and Janet Sussman and Ian McKellen are all reading. And so there's great plans for turning it into a fully restored theatre.
Is that quite a thrill to perform on a stage where you know some of those greats have also performed? They've been stood in the same spot that you have.
Well, I mean, more than that, it's on that space, that spot where Shakespeare produces, put on his first plays.
Yes, because he put them there first before the Globe
was built. That's right, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So wow, what a thrill for everyone.
Absolutely, yeah, it was a fantastic experience. We got some very good reviews. And
that was the other thing as well. I mean, it just seemed four-star review after four-star review. You know,
modesty prevents me.
Well, days out of five, so there is room for improvement, but you know, that's not bad though, is it? It's not too shabby.
No, not too shabby.
Not too shabby at all. Yeah. Okay, where do you want to start though this month?
Well, if we start, if I may, with the Maltings. Starting tomorrow night on the 9th, we have a production of Earth Hour, which is a very topically relevant play written by Jack Stanley about climate change. Its theme is a TV show which is focused on climate change, which everybody watches since the government declared 10 years previously that climate change was irreversible and irreparable. And the play is about the clash between one of the presenters who wants to keep things fairly light and frothy and another one who wants to start asking some hard questions. And as time ticks away, counting down to the end of the world, this argument continues on. So that's directed by our very good friend Stan Walton. He's a hugely talented young director who's done quite a bit of stuff with us, a regular stage manager, duty manager at the Maltings. So that's on from the 9th to the 11th of May, starting at 8 p.m. Tickets £13.50, £11, £7.50, and details all available from the Maltings website.
Which is maltingsartstheatre.co.uk.
Exactly.
I'll get that in before you get it wrong and get told off by the boss over there.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that's Earth Hour.
Yep, and then for a run of six shows then between the 16th and 18th and 23rd and 25th of May for The Changeling, which is a restoration play written by Thomas Middleton and William Rowley. Although very much a creation of its time, lots of murders, rapes, incest and blood and black humour. We have taken this, or the director, David Bevan, has taken this and put it in a reality TV, in the context of a reality TV show.
I saw a trailer for this
on
your Facebook page.
Yeah, that's right.
It's quite interesting to see a trailer for a play. You know, it was quite innovative, I thought. I was going to say, it doesn't look like it's a Jacobean tragedy from the trailer.
Not at all, no. It's set in a contemporary rehab clinic. And everything's recorded, so video recorded, so it'll all be seen on screen, and we'll also be live streaming some of that, one of the performances live. So it should be a really interesting take on a very old play. But
so you're going to be live streaming it. People could be on their smart devices in the theatre, watching it on the screen, whilst also seeing it out
Indeed they can. Yeah.
That'd be weird if they did that, because they could just watch it, and that's the point of being at the theatre. But yeah. I guess, you know, some people like that kind of bonus content type of thing,
exactly,
don't they?
Exactly,
okay.
Yeah. So, as I say, that's 16th to the 18th, and then 23rd to the 25th. Then throughout May we have our usual Hearts Jazz evenings, now moved to Sunday evenings from Tuesday, which is proving much more popular.
Mm-hmm.
And those will be on the 5th, 12th, 19th and 26th of May.
Okay. We will take a break there. We'll be back with more, looking at the other theatres around St Albans and looking a bit further afield on the local theatre scene when we return with David Widdowson a bit later in this week's edition of the St Albans podcast. My special guest on this edition of the St Albans podcast is Roberto Filicetta, who is from the University of Hertfordshire. Hello, welcome onto the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Danny. I'm very glad to be here to talk about the Sonic Hearts Festival.
Yes, so Sonic Hearts is a music festival that actually started on the 7th of May, but it runs right through to the 17th of May, and it's over in Hatfield, part of the University of Hertfordshire, is that right?
It is indeed part of the University of Hertfordshire, and it's part of the programme of the educational programme of the music department at the University of Hertfordshire.
And so it's an annual thing. How long has it been running?
It has been running for many, many years. I took the artistic directorship of the festival over in 2004. At that time, it used to be called Mayfest, and then 5 years ago, we rebranded it as Sonic Hearts.
Okay. So this is your 15th festival then, if you started in 2004?
Indeed.
Wow.
It's a very long history, and I'm so pleased to say, looking back, of the amazing artists that we have been bringing to the festival. You see, the educational purpose of the festival is to expose our students to music from many different cultures. It's very important that they absorb influences. It's also very important that the international community of students at the University of Hertfordshire is well represented. So long before internationalization became a top priority in universities, the festival was already doing its bit, and I've been bringing artists from absolutely all over the world, but I'm talking about top names,
okay.
Not just minor artists. From Korea, we had Dulsori, Taiko drummers. From India, we had the Dohad Gypsies from Rajasthan. We had Bharatanatyam, South Indian classical dance. We had Carnatic music, again from some top representatives of the style. Many, many bands from Africa, Frititi, Kakatsisi, and Fali Koyate, amongst others. From Japan, we had Rie Yanagisawa. She sings and plays koto and shamisen, and accompanied by Clive Bell on shakuhachi. Again, these are top names. From Egypt, we had Hassan Eraji. From Brazil, we had several samba parades and a very complex history of samba, a music theater piece. Spanish classical guitar, we had Dimitri de Cavallas. Flamenco, we had many, many artists, including Alcazaba, La Típica, and the legendary Paco Peña, who happened to be that year in London. So Paco Peña performed at the Royal Festival Hall and at the University of Hertfordshire.
Wow, so if it only does two UK gigs, that's quite impressive, isn't it? That one of them is here.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Okay, so who is this festival aimed at then? So it's run by the staff and the students of the university, but am I right in thinking it is open to everyone?
It is indeed, yes. Everybody is welcome. And indeed, there is a small crowd of aficionados who I see more or less every year. And it pleases me when they tell me that the festival is the best kept secret. which is nice to hear, but it would also be nice if the information
if it got out there a bit wider.
Yes.
Well, let's hope that perhaps through you appearing on our podcast this week, that maybe a few more people will discover the Sonic Hearts Festival. So can I just ask then, what would you say to people who perhaps think, do you know what, I kind of like a music festival, but I've not heard of any of those people? Do you find that as a response that you get from some people? Because that is an eclectic mix of musicians there.
Indeed.
But they're not necessarily names that people might have heard of who are not into that kind of music scene.
Well, but that's the purpose of the festival is to bring to the public the sort of music that is not generally out there. I mean, it sounds crazy in these days of internet to say that this music is not out there. It is out there, but it's you have to struggle to find it.
Okay.
Because it's not the dominant kind of discourse.
Sure.
Around.
We'll have more from Roberto from the Sonic Hearts Music Festival a little bit later in today's podcast.
Stop the press. It's Front Page Frankie.
We're back with Frankie Berry. What's the next news story that we're going to look at this week?
Yes, so the planning portal, which is the council's website where people can comment on planning applications and view planning documents, and although it's a little bit dry, it's something that people in St Norman's are very interested in, essentially because lots of people get very worked up about how the future of the city, I mean, understandably, about how the future of the city is going to go forward and the development that we're allowed to have and should have and what that will look like and all of those issues. But basically, the planning portal where you can comment on those has been, for a very long time, had crashes, problems, lots of issues, and it's basically overloaded. But the council has said that they're updating the whole system. And so, by the summer, there should be...
There was a flamboyant hand gesture there. I'm not really sure what that meant, and it doesn't translate well to a podcast. That as if to say, you're not saying which summer, but by a summer?
No, it's this summer.
Summer
2019. This summer, we should have a new planning portal. So for people who are really up on planning applications, maybe the Civic Society would be quite interested in this, that it will find it much easier to comment and view planning applications, in theory.
Okay. That's something that will make a difference to a lot of people. You know, there's an awful lot of people locally that are applying for planning permission for all sorts of things, and it is a known difficulty. I remember being some years ago at a local event where a councillor addressed the audience and actually said he knows how difficult it is because he's having great problems trying to put in his own thing for something in his own home, and he said he shared the pains that the people asking these questions were feeling, because he said, I can't do it myself, I can't work out how that works.
And
I believe he might well have been a councillor whose portfolio this fell under, and he couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So it shows just how difficult this has been for quite a long time.
Yeah, of course, and it's something that lots of people will be looking forward to, I suppose. I mean, speaking to portfolio holder currently, Councillor Mary Maynard, she was saying that the St Norman's District Council planning department is one of the largest in the country. There are
really?
so many planning applications coming through. And this has all been kind of brought to the fore, as it were, because the website crashed for a whole 4 days in April. Just 4 days when people couldn't, these are planning application deadlines are going past, and the whole website crashed. And it was because documents from the local plan, which, I mean, are massive files, were being uploaded to the website, and it just killed it for everyone. Anyway, so they're revamping it and are moving all the documents across, in theory, onto this new platform. So I'm excited to see it, because it's something that, as a journalist, we use quite a lot as well, and it is quite clunky. So I'm excited to see what this new platform holds.
All right, and we don't have a precise date, but it'll be out in the summer.
Yes.
Okay. There you go. New planning portal on its way for St Albans resident planning. That's a sort of summary of that, is it? I guess it's all sorts of planning.
All sorts of planning, residential, yeah.
Commercial, whatever.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. Well, and of course, if you wanted to find out more about that and about any of these stories that we're talking about, the Hearts Advertiser has a reasonably good website.
Yep, pretty good.
Yeah. It's had fewer complaints than the planning portal.
Yes, I'd like to hope so. So that's heartsad.co.uk.
More from Front Page Frankie a little bit later in the podcast. David Widdowson, our theatre correspondent, is here with us. David.
Thanks, Danny. So next we go to down the hill to the Abbey Theatre, and already started there is a production of Things I Know to Be True by Andrew Bovell, a story of a family through the eyes of four grown-up siblings, exploring themes like travel, where you're from, where you're going to, what sort of duties children owe to their parents, and the danger of unarticulated emotions. I saw this actually in Oxford. Frantic Assembly, who are very well known for their physical theatre work, they contributed a lot to A Curious Incident, the long-running production in the West End. They are absolutely fantastic, and I'm sure the Company of Ten will do this proud. It's a really, really great show.
Okay, yeah, so that's on until Saturday the 11th of May.
That's right.
Sam and I, producer Sam here on the podcast, we went to see this on Friday, and we would have mentioned that a bit earlier in the podcast. I'm putting a lot of faith in that because we're recording this before that bit, but I know that we are going to see it, and we will be talking about it in that bit. Excellent. So people listening to this right now will know that we've already talked about it, and they'll know what we thought of it.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm quite confident it'll be quite good because the Company of Ten, you know, they don't know any other way of doing theatre.
Yeah.
You know, we are, I say this often, but we are spoilt locally with the ability, you know, with the talent we have on offer, the various theatre groups that are around. You know, we really are spoilt for choice.
Yep. Okay. And then next, on the 16th of May, Humdinger's Comedy, an evening, a lineup of handpicked comedy. Comedy artists on the 17th following night, St Albans Chamber Opera.
Yeah, now this sounds quite interesting. An evening with Mr W.S. Gilbert and Mr Arthur Sullivan.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
So it's Gilbert and Sullivan.
Gilbert and Sullivan. Yep, absolutely.
Okay.
A cornucopia of GNS songs and music.
Okay. So that an evening like that, so that's going to be a selection of their stuff. It's not going to be one of their pieces of work. It will just be songs from their various pieces of work put together.
Yes, I would think some well known songs, perhaps interspersed with some not so well known ones. But it's always Chamber Opera again. They're so good at this sort of stuff. It'll be a great evening.
Okay, that's the 17th of May at the in the Abbey Theatre Studio, which is their smaller room, yes, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah. And then from the 21st to 25th of May, we have Modern Dance for Beginners. This is a production put on by Duality Theatre Company, which is the brainchild of one of our guys, who's one of the people who's actually with us quite a bit, Peter Bryans. That's a comical yet poignant reflection on commitment, fidelity, love, marriage and sex. And that's on from the 21st to the 25th of May.
And we've got Lily and Sarah from that production on next week's podcast.
Excellent.
So they will be coming in on the podcast to talk about that. I think one of those is an actor and the other one is the director,
okay.
I think. But anyway, they'll be in next week to talk about that. So that's the 21st to the 25th of May,
yep.
Down at the Abbey Theatre, again in their studio.
Yes. Then on the main stage, on the 30th of May, Lily and the Bear, this is a children's show, which we've had at the Maltings, in fact. Really great afternoon out for kids. And then starting on the 3rd of June until the 8th of June, a play written by Mark Waghorn, who's
appeared on stage all over the place lately,
yeah,
hasn't he?
Yeah, I've appeared on stage with Mark at the Maltings, and he's done a lot down at the Abbey as well. But this time he's turned his hand to writing, and the play is a thriller with a fairly hefty dollop of humour, and it's called By Way of Murder, or subtitled Murder, Sex, Kidnap, Suicide, Blackmail and Despicable Deceit.
Yeah, so I saw this last year over at the Pump House in Watford,
okay.
And Mark came on with one of the other cast members and spoke about this because this was a real labour of love for him. So he directed it, he wrote it as well, and I was thrilled because when I went to see it, I worked out who did it before the end. I was really pleasing myself. incredibly pleased, more pleased with myself than I needed to be, but I was chuffed because I don't
make sure everybody knew it.
No, I just had that quite little glow, you know. I wasn't going to shout out I knew it or anything like that. I didn't want to spoil it for anyone, but no, it was a very entertaining evening at the theatre, and it was quite funny, and it worked over, you know, it worked despite the fact that it's quite dark. It didn't take away the humour, didn't take away from the fact that there was this, you know, it was a thriller as well. So, you know, it was very well balanced, I thought. Okay. Hitting the microphone there. Right, we're gonna be back with more about the local theatre scene with David Widdowson, our theatre correspondent, a bit later in the podcast.
Hi, I'm Elspeth Jackman, inviting you to listen to my podcast, One to One with Elspeth. Find a local person with a story, and I'll be there to draw out all those little details you want to know about. If I'm fascinated, so will you be. Each week I'll be talking to an interesting character who has a tale to tell. And the beauty of it is you can listen whenever you want to. To find the podcast, go to your podcasting platform of choice and search for the St. Albans Podcast. Alternatively, go to stalbanspodcast.com/Elspeth. That's One to One with Elspeth, part of the St. Albans Podcast in association with the Hearts Advertiser. You never know, you could be my next guest.
Here's Ian Rogers now and producer Sam with some more hot topics for us. Ian, what have you got?
Well, this is about online reviews. There's dozens of them around, aren't there? And people say there's no such thing as bad publicity, but a bad review can have a huge impact on your business. But it's not every bad review that paints a full picture. Perhaps no surprise when one business owner decided he wasn't having any of it when one man gave him a scathing one-star review for his escape room. What's more, the man in question seemed to not grasp what the whole premise behind an escape room is. You know what an escape room is?
I think so. Sam, do you know what one is?
It's kind of like you get locked in a room and you have to find clues in order to get out. And if you can do it in a certain time, then I guess you're good at it. Otherwise, I don't know what happens if you don't.
There's like puzzles and things, isn't there?
Yeah.
So like you solve a puzzle and then you get another clue and then you eventually you operate a mechanism or find a key somewhere.
Exactly.
And then you can get, and it's a team thing, isn't it? It's supposed to be lots of great fun.
Yeah, some people do it as corporate things rather.
Oh, like team building.
Team building type of stuff. Someone I know, they've been to the one at South Kentish Town Dishoo Station a couple of times.
Okay.
That was on the Northern Line.
Right.
And there is a ghost story associated with the station that closed down in the 1920s. That a customer got off there, got stranded and died, and they've now built a whole thing around the escape room in that the ghost is there.
Oh, yeah. Spooky stuff.
Yeah, but there was also a disaster in one in Japan, wasn't there? People got killed. There was a fire or something.
Wow, way to bring it down, Ian.
Gosh.
Yeah. No, but this is a thing, isn't it? Because you sort of think, you know, if this is a room that you can't easily get out of, and then suddenly there is an emergency. But I'm assuming they have all that covered. They must have a break glass type thing.
Of course they do. Yeah. There's quite an amusing episode of Not Going Out with Lee Mack. They're in an escape room. It's quite funny. Anyway, moving on with this one. In the review that was shared on one of the endless review websites, the unnamed man wrote, at the beginning there was just a bunch of rules on what I should and shouldn't touch, and this is what he wrote on it. I'm definitely never going back. Went there for my brother's birthday. We were disappointed by our experience. We played the attic room, which I think was the most difficult room. At the beginning there was just a bunch of rules on what we shouldn't do and stuff we shouldn't touch. If it's not a part of the game, then put something better than a dumb red sticker on it. The clues had nothing to do with the story. There was no fun clues or riddles. The whole thing was just an endless series of finding codes or locks and looking for keys. And when we finished the room, we met the owner, who was rude and didn't seem to know what he was talking about. I'm guessing he was just upset that we didn't like it, and we will not be returning to this place. It was super disappointing.
See, that's quite a detailed negative review. That's not just saying it's rubbish, don't go there. He's actually gone and spelled out what it is he's unhappy about.
Yep, indeed. And this is what the owner put back on as a response.
Okay.
We appreciate all your feedback at... And they blanked out where it actually is. Mm-hmm. So thank you for this. somewhat shocking review. Like most escape rooms, we clearly mark items which are not part of the game. This was also stated to your group, including oral introductions on the website during registration and on the signed waivers. Naturally, it's impossible to exhaustively and comprehensively list every conceivable activity one should avoid. For example, we do not explicitly warn guests against attempts to set the building alight because most recognise the benefit in avoiding such acts. Okay. A degree of sarcasm there, isn't there?
I mean, do we know if this was the gentleman's first experience of an escape room?
Well, I'm judging by it that it was, and...
Doesn't sound like he really entered into the spirit of it.
No.
Well, the owner went on to say, it sounds like he's missed the whole point of what an escape room entails.
We should an escape room.
We should
find a local escape room and we should go and do that. There must be one around here somewhere.
There must be in St Albans.
I don't know if there's one in St Albans, but there must be one not too far.
I'm not aware that there is, but apparently the group went on to pull wires out of the wall.
Oh dear.
Stuck his hands in somewhere. I'm just trying to find... yes, here we are. It's on page 3 of 5. So 5 pages on this one. The whole thing started to get really bad for the review when the owner went into more detail. He said, members of your group ripped out wires out of the props, wires which were tied, taped and had markers on them indicating they shouldn't be touched. A member of the group then pulled the wires apart and thrust bare wires into a live electrical outlet, also marked with warning stickers, damaging the property and tripping out a circuit breaker. And to finish off, he added what happened when he confronted one of the kids about his behaviour. When he asked why he'd stuck the bare wires in an outlet, one responded, "I know a lot about electricity."
Wow. I think he's worked on my house, though, actually. It does sound like... I think I've had that guy.
That's
shocking.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Definitely, we should do it. It's an Albans podcast, like, day out to an escape room. We, you know, imagine us and Front Page Frankie as well. You know, the four of us. Wow.
Yeah. You have to on video, but unfortunately a lot of those places are dark, so it might not come out, which could well be the best.
Yeah, although the look of joy on your face at the moment, Ian, at the mere suggestion of the four of us doing an escape room, it looks like you might be busy that day.
It's a good job, but it's not on video then, isn't it?
Okay, Ian and Sam will be back with more hot topics on another edition of the St Albans podcast. Thanks, guys. We're talking to Roberto Filosetta. He is involved with the Sonic Hearts Music Festival, which is happening over in Hatfield. It's part of the University of Hertfordshire, and it runs from the 7th to the 17th of May. Now, in the first part, we were talking a bit about how, to some people, they may not necessarily have heard of these artists before, but you were saying, you know, that's kind of part of the purpose of it, is perhaps to introduce new music or new artists or new genres to people, to give them an experience that they maybe wouldn't have had before.
Yes, it's a part of the university's commitment to present, to foster a cultural exchange, to foster the respect for other cultures. It's part of that agenda.
Okay. Do you feature any sort of homegrown talent as well? Are there any students?
Yes, of course. I mean, now I've been talking about the guest artists, but the festival is very rich in performances by our own students, the staff. So it is an opportunity to present work by ourselves and by our students. And of course, they do all their hip-hop and rock bands that is already there, and we encourage it. So the pedagogical value of bringing artists from all over the world is not so much to divert our students from the music that they are into, on the contrary, but we believe that if they become aware of music of other cultures and if they absorb influences, then even when they go and do their own music, even commercial music, it would sound different. It would start to sound interesting, because the problem is, how do you emerge in this sea of sameness for anybody who is trying to make a career in the music industry.
Yeah, having a unique identity is so important. And unfortunately, these days, there are so many artists out there, emerging artists, people on talent shows and the like.
That's right.
They all kind of sound the same.
Exactly. So how do you address this problem? And the best thing you can do is to absorb influences from the richness of music from other cultures.
Okay.
Very important.
Sonic Hearts 2019 is on from the 7th to the 17th of May. It's on at the Hatfield campus?
It is indeed at the Hatfield campus.
Okay. Now, some people will be put off by the music festivals. They think, well, they're great, but they're very expensive. How does Sonic Hearts compare to others?
It compares by being almost entirely free. There is only one event this year that is charged to external audiences, and that is the performance by Cafe Reason Buto Dance Theatre. This is, by the way, a large-scale work that I have commissioned specifically as a site-specific work to this particular venue, and is a very important work that has received Arts Council funding, because it's a work that touches on social environmental responsibility, so it's very timely. It's titled Tipping Point, which tells already what is trying to say about the current situation.
Okay, and that one's on next Thursday, the 16th of May, 7:30 at the Forum.
Correct, yes. That is a large capacity venue, so you know we can have as much as 2,000 people in the audience. And so,
okay. If people want to find out more about the programme or even want to book tickets, because I gather you've got a book, even if it's for the free events, you've still got a book.
Indeed.
Where can people find out more and do all that?
Yes, on the University of Hertfordshire's website, there is a link to the UHRs, which is the body that curates and manages all the events.
Okay, I gather that the website is uharts.co.uk.
Yes, that's correct. Yes,
okay, we will link to that from our website as well, from stalbanspodcast.com. So if you were thinking, oh, I didn't write that down in time, or I didn't click that in time,
yes,
go to our website, stalbanspodcast.com, and you'll find the link to that website as well.
Yeah. One other thing that I would like to point out to the festival is the commitment to involve particularly women. We had some, again, top names like Kate Shaw, Shirley Smart, Alice Zawaski, Xenia Pestova. We had a symposium last year specifically on women in the audio industry, and this year we have Vicky Clark, who is a member of SONA. This is an organization supporting women in music technology. So that's another important part of the festival.
Okay. Roberto, thank you very much for coming on and sharing about Sonic Hearts 2019 on this week's edition of the St Albans podcast.
Stop the press. It's Front Page Frankie.
Frankie, what's the final news story we're going to be looking at this week?
Hello, yes. So there is a St Albans man who's worked as a chef for a very long time, actually, who's walking the famous cycle route from John O'Groats to Land's End, the whole length of the country, except he's walking it.
Wow.
So it's going to take him quite a long time.
Okay.
Starting in May and finishing in June, I believe. And he's raising money for...
So it's going to take him at least 4 to 6 weeks.
Yep. Good maths there.
Thank you. Well, because it could have been the beginning of May to the end of June, you see. So it could be longer than 4 weeks.
Let me get the precise date for
you. Okay.
It is the 12th of May. Oh, it's actually... Oh, wow. I'm so sorry, I was wrong. It's the 12th of May to the 1st of August. So it's actually much longer.
It did sound like that was going to be quite a quick walk.
It's actually longer than that.
How far is it?
Over 1,000 miles. Yeah, over 1,000 miles. I believe it's around 1,300 miles is his route.
Right.
Which is a long way. A long way. And he's raising money, I should say, for the Mental Health Foundation. And he says that as he walks, that it's very mindful for him. And he can release the stresses of daily life while he walks. And he wants to bring mental health awareness and raise money for a really good cause doing this challenge.
Okay. And is he starting from John O'Groats?
Yes.
Okay, and he's walking to Land's End.
That's the one.
Right, okay, because sometimes it's often described as Land's End to John O'Groats, so I wondered if, you know, often people do it the other way. But I guess there's no rules on it, he can do it however he likes.
I suppose it's yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
And is he doing this on his own? Is it part of a team? Are there other people doing
it? No, it's on his own. His own, and he wants to get to know people along the way, but he's doing it all on his own. He's a really nice guy.
Okay.
I know him.
And what's his name?
Ben Garcia.
Okay, well, Ben, what a wonderful effort. Do we know roughly how many miles a day that he's going to be walking?
I believe he does have a route plan if you go onto his fundraising page, which is very complicated, but it differs depending on... So sometimes he'll do more and sometimes he'll do less, if that makes sense, each day. But he's got a route plan on the fundraising page. Shall I give you the fundraising page?
You can read it out, and then we'll link to it as well from the St Albans Podcast .com website.
So it's virginmoneygiving.com/BenGarcia.walks.
Ben Garcia walks, all one word.
BenGarcia.walks.
BenGarcia.walks.
That's the one.
So that's Virgin Money. Is that, no, Virgin Giving?
Sorry, virginmoneygiving.com.
Okay, I'm writing this down. .com/BenGarcia.walks, and that's where people can donate and find out more about what he's doing.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
Well, yeah, a remarkable part of that. And does he walk anywhere near here at any point in the journey? Do we know?
Not really. No, he's at the moment he's living in New Zealand, actually. So he is from St Albans, and he went to Sandringham.
Right.
But he's travelled all over the world.
Yeah, but him being in New Zealand is neither here nor there. Will he be on this route?
No,
is he coming near St Albans at all?
I don't believe so.
Right, answer the question. My word, worse than a politician.
Maybe so that's
his route doesn't bring him this way.
I don't believe so. No.
Okay.
No.
Right, well, that was all.
That's it, really.
I thought we could have gone out and seen waved at him at a certain point if he was going to be coming down the high street or something like that.
Oh, that would have been nice. Yeah, that would have been nice.
But then equally, if it adds like an extra, I don't know, 100 miles to his journey, probably not so nice.
I mean, if you think about the country,
you
would be quite a bit of a detour, wouldn't it?
I would imagine so.
Yeah.
Does he know how many pairs of shoes he's going to have with him? Because I'm guessing he's going to wear out a few.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I haven't asked him. I presumably he can buy them along the way. He's not going to have to carry loads of pairs of shoes.
Well, I don't know. I mean, how much of his stuff does he have to carry? And where's he staying? He's not like camping at night, is he? Is he staying in different places?
So he's actually also raised... So he's raising money for the Mental Health Foundation, but he's also accepting donations for his bed and board along the way. I'm not actually sure whether that means exclusively camping, exclusively B&Bs, or a bit of both. I'm not actually sure.
Just thinking, because if he's walking that is a phenomenal effort. If he's got to walk that with a tent on his back and with all of his stuff with him, that's like
he
several times more of an
he
effort.
He definitely does have a rucksack and with quite a lot of stuff in it. 100%.
Yeah. Because I remember back in, when I was young, there was a famous cricketer, Ian Botham, who walked from Land's End to John O'Groats, and the press sort of followed him, and there were updates on the news quite often about this walk. But he was part of there was a whole entourage with him, and he was just, you'd see pictures of him walking, just like with his hands in his pockets, you know, just walking along, you know, and there were other people around, and there was like cars driving along with him, and there were places where he stayed each night. He didn't have to carry anything on his person. So if he's doing this all on his own...
Yeah, no, Ben's definitely... In fact, I saw an update recently that he emailed round that said... That was saying... It actually said how heavy his rucksack was that he'd packed it. And it said how heavy, but I don't remember how heavy it was. But he's definitely carrying all his stuff.
You anticipated my next question and just let me down straight away with the fact you don't know that.
Yeah.
It's heavy.
It's heavy, yeah. But he's packed it already.
Right.
He's so ready to go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Ben, we wish you every success with that. So he starts on the 12th of May, did you say?
That's the one.
And that's quite soon. And he's going to be going through till August?
August, yeah.
All right, well, August. Phenomenal effort. And again, we will put the link to that on our website, stalbanspodcast.com. Frankie Berry, thank you for the news.
Thank you.
And you'll be back next week?
Yes.
I'll see you then.
Thank you.
David Widdowson, our very own theatre correspondent, is here with us on the St Albans podcast. David.
Yes, thanks, Danny. Next up is Trestle Art Space. On the 17th of May, The Ghost of Chesterton House. This is a production by Freeman Productions. A horror, I suppose. A man seeks the company of a lodger to exorcise ghostly visions that haunt him. But as night creeps in a world of failing light and creaking floorboards, they soon discover strange shadows lurking in the dark.
Now, I remember asking you about this before, or not about this thing specifically, but just saying, do horrors work in the theatre? And you were kind of saying, absolutely.
Terrifying. Some of the ones I've seen, one in particular, The Woman in Black, I think I mentioned last time.
Yeah.
So this is the action happens around... around you. There are four performances, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and maximum 14 audience members per performance. So I guess you're going to be in the middle of the theatre and stuff will happen around you. And not for the faint-hearted, because it's described as not suitable for expectant mothers, those suffering with asthma, heart, neck or back conditions, high blood pressure, photosensitive epilepsy, seizures or related medical conditions, or if you're sensitive to loud and sudden noises. Strobe lighting, haze and flashing effects are used throughout. Don't say we didn't warn you.
I wonder if they're protesting too much there. That's like, was it Alfred Hitchcock when they used to put on late night showings of Psycho? He used to get stories put in the local press about how people had to be sort of carried out by stretcher because they were just too traumatised by it. It was all made up.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously it was scary, but it wasn't quite what they were saying. But that does sound like a bit of a kind of a diversion somewhat from what they normally do at Trestle. It seems often they do very family-friendly and children's things there as well.
Yes, they don't put on so much in the way of productions anymore at the theatre. A lot of it is sort of is classes and training. They obviously, the Trestle company itself goes on tour, and when it goes on tour, then it'll have some shows or whatever it's touring with at the art space, but it's, you know, good to see it being used again. It's a great space to act in. I've done it, that's where I started off actually for OVO. It's a really, really nice theatre.
Okay, and that production once again is called?
That's called The Ghost of Chesterton House.
And that's the 17th of May.
That's right.
And it says here it's from 6 till 10, that's quite a long time, isn't
it? I think there's four showings, that's the thing. So
oh, okay.
So that's why it's small numbers for each, I guess it'll be... tickets might be quite hard to come by for that.
Right, okay. I'm just looking on their website now and it looks like they still have some available, but it does look like you've got to be very quick.
Yeah.
And bearing in mind I'm saying that when we're recording this, as you're listening to this, they, you know, you'd be really, really quick. But more information about that and all the other stuff that Trestle have is can be found on their website, which is trestle.org.uk.
And on to the arena. Quite an interesting month now. Not so much of the tribute bands and films. We have an evening with Paul Gascoigne on the 10th, a couple of days' time. Then quite a bit of comedy. Al Murray on the 15th and 16th of May, followed by Reginald D. Hunter on the 18th of May. Then some three good acts for people of certainly my vintage, perhaps even yours as well, Denny. Leo Sayer on the 19th of May.
Before my time, but thank you.
Jules Holland on the 29th.
Kind of my time, yeah.
Of May, and Paul Young then on the 3rd of June.
Right, well, my sister will love that one. but the Jules Holland one, though, I gather that's often one of their fastest selling shows.
Yeah, I'm sure. I don't know if it is sold out, but it normally is.
I've heard tale that in the past, because he comes every year, and I've heard that sometimes that day, they announce it and it's already gone.
Yeah, I'm sure that's right.
But there might always be cancellations and you know, extra tickets released and things like that.
Yeah.
But I know some people who've been and they just say wonderful night of music. So those things that I guess you can find on the arena's website.
You can indeed. And then just before we finish up, on the 8th of June, we have an adult panto. Yes, we do. An adult panto, Snow White and the Expletive Deleted, Expletive Deleted.
Okay.
And then finally, on the 10th of June, Paul Merton and friends.
Oh, I saw him a few years ago at the arena. What a wonderful evening. I mean, that's if you've not experienced sort of improv and that kind of thing live, then it is definitely worth going along. Yeah, absolutely. You know, the talent that goes into doing that sort of thing. They make it look easy, and it's anything but.
I'm sure,
Okay. We will link to different places that David has mentioned there on the website now, stalbanspodcast.com. David Widdowson, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Well, that brings another edition of the St Albans podcast to a close. This isn't the only podcast that's part of the St Albans podcast. Using the word podcast there a lot, aren't I?
Yeah, but this is our medium.
Yeah.
Podcast.
Okay. But yes, yeah, so we have a few different
sister show.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, there are three shows at the moment. There might be more coming. Ooh. But there are three at the moment.
Heard that here first.
Yeah. There are three that are part of the St Albans podcast at the moment. This is the main one that comes out every Wednesday. But also, if you like films, then you want to check out the film guide, the St Albans podcast film guide with Simon Carver. That comes out Fridays. If you go to wherever you found this one and search, you'll find also the film guide with Simon Carver, where we look at Simon's choice of films on free-to-air TV for the forthcoming week. Those are UK free-to-air TV channels, in case you're listening from beyond. It is possible.
Yes, true.
Also, we look at the new releases in the UK cinema that are films that are coming out in our area, so ones that are on in our local cinemas around here. And we start things off with the UK cinema box office top 10. That's every Friday on the St Albans podcast film guide. We also have one-to-one with Elspeth Jackman. Elspeth, an acclaimed St Albans based Christian broadcaster, has her own show each and every Monday that comes out as part of the St Albans podcast. So do check out those shows. Sam, what's on next week's podcast?
Well, of course, we have more local news with Frankie. Alan Bellinger will be here talking health matters. And from the Abbey Theatre, Lily and Sarah will be telling us about their modern dance for beginners.
Yes, so Sarah is the director of a play, and Lily is one of the actors in a play called Modern Dance for Beginners, which is out at the end of, I think it's the end of May or the beginning of June. But anyway, it's coming up in a few weeks' time, and we'll find out more when they join us on next week's podcast. In the meantime, producer Sam, thanks very much.
All right, see you soon. Thanks for listening to this edition of the St Albans podcast with Danny Smith. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please rate, review and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or a podcast platform of your choice. This will help us reach more listeners. Join us, the St Albans podcast, next Wednesday for more news, views and reviews. In the meantime, commit no nuisance. Produced by Samantha Rolfe. Logo and artwork by David Ellis. This is an independent production in association with the Hearts Advertiser. If you would like to become a community partner or a sponsor of the podcast, please visit stalbanspodcast.com for more details.